Hey, you, my entrepreneurial friend, of 10 years of running my coaching business, I am going to finally teach business. And of course, I'm going to teach business with human design. Because the thing that I've discovered over the last decade is that the way everyone else taught me to run a business didn't freaking work for me. So over this last decade, to create a multiple seven-figure business, I've broken all the rules. I have done everything my way. I have looked experts in the face and downright said no, all to create something I love with greater ease and flow that literally is changing the world. And the best part is it doesn't feel like work at all. It feels like I get to hang out with my best friends and I am having a huge impact on the planet at the same time. So if you own a business that you want to finally maybe start, grow, or even scale, then come and join me on the 9th of May to discover how your human design can create the most beautiful, authentic success for you. For all the details, follow the link in the show notes. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Arakwell people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay my respects to the elders past, present, and emerging. Are you ready to win at the game of life? Well, throw out that rule book and get down to the business of being the best and most authentic version of you. Welcome to the Human Design Podcast. We're changing the rules around success, abundance, purpose, love, and life, where we're creating a planet where everyone can thrive in a world that loves and supports each other. I'm your host, Emma Dunwoody, a qualified master coach, human design expert, podcaster, and entrepreneur that is living the life of my dreams, breaking all the rules while doing it, making a huge impact, and living my design and manifesting miracles on the daily. Join me as I break down and simplify everything you need to live in alignment with your human design, teach you how to recondition your unconscious mind for greatness, and to take back your power so you can manifest your heaven on earth and serve the rest of the planet at the same time. It's time to give up the fear and step into your highest potential, to reach for the stars, to know and live your greatness. It's what you deserve, and it's what the planet really needs from you. So buckle up and enjoy the ride.
This is your monthly reminder to go to the show notes and check out the Body Graph Chart software. I know you've heard us talk about this before, so I'll keep this very short and very sweet. But if you want to know the tool that we've used to bring in over 20,000 new leads and five figures in passive revenue into our business, then go check it out. It's amazing. Stop sending people away to other people's websites to get their human design chart. Instead, use this tool to put it on your own website. You won't regret it. And use the code Human Design Podcast, all lowercase, all together, Human Design Podcast, to get 50% off for a year.
Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Well, I am super excited to have today's guest because she is someone who has inspired me for years. I've been an entrepreneur since 2011, and this human being, whether she has absolutely no idea of any of this, obviously, has been a really big figure in that entrepreneurial journey. So, Lola Berry, welcome to the podcast.
I'm so pumped to be here. After sitting down next to you at lunch, I was like, you're a legend, so it's nice to be here.
Oh, wow, thank you. Well, you're a legend, you know, you're, as we, you know, connect and speak right now, you're an author, you're an entrepreneur, you're a podcaster, you're now an actor, like you're doing all of the things. And for the listeners out there, yes, Lola is a manifesting generator. She's a 5-1 emotional MG, cross of informing. And yeah, far out, like that's a lot. So let's go back to the beginning a little bit. I know that your journey really started, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because you needed to eat in a different way. You had to eat gluten-free, and that kind of started this whole snowball. Is that right?
Yeah, I was always a bit of a food nerd, I think. Even growing up, like Mum used to always say at kids' parties, I'd be the one not playing games but like having seconds and thirds at the party table. So I've always been a foodie, and then I started working in morning tally. And I remember I was doing morning TV and I was shopping. I lived in Melbourne at the time, and I was shopping at Paran Market one day. And someone came up to me and said, I watched you on TV this morning. Great segment, but you should never wear yellow. It makes you look pudgy. And I was like, oh. And then I got really self-conscious that I was overweight and I would never introduce myself as a nutritionist. I'd always introduce myself as a foodie, even though I had a full Bachelor of Health Science majoring in nutritional medicine degree. And I think that that was something that kind of like spurred me to just understand like what my body thrived off, and cutting the gluten was probably one of the first things that I was like, oh my goodness, I feel less inflamed. And so that was an initial kind of like, it wasn't like I had an autoimmune condition like a lot of other people that get there that way. Like I was just getting, and there was like YouTube hate about like how fat I was and that I was a failure of a nutritionist. Yeah. And I was just like, it was so confronting as someone. I started morning TV when I was 23. So being so young and impressionable and having like all these strangers say that about my weight was really confronting.
So how do you handle that? Like, I mean, I worked in TV from 18 till, well, actually on and off till I was in my early 30s, you know, like I get it. It was awful. And the things that were said to me were like off the charts. And I worked just in the sales department. Like I wasn't in front of the camera. Like who cares what my body looked like? But at 23, how do you handle that? When someone actually thinks that they have the right to tell you their opinion, and as a line five people, we all know this, right? These are other people's projections being projected onto you. But at 23, you don't know that. So how do you navigate through that? That would have been hard.
Can you teach me what line five means? Does that mean people project what they feel onto who you
are? Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
With the line five, right, so as human beings, so let's just step backwards, take a step back from human design. As human beings, from a behavioral perspective, we see the world as we are, not as it is. So we're always projecting our own perceptions onto everybody else. However, when we put the filter of human design over the top, line fives have this expanded or like this intensified projection field where we, because I'm a line five as well, we walk around and it's like we have a beacon on our head that says, we can save you, we can rescue you, we can solve all your problems. But what happens is the unresourceful expression of that is that people actually project their wound onto us. So they will literally accuse us of the thing that is their wound that they need to heal.
Whoa.
Because the line five's also the healer, right? So our primary journey is to heal ourselves first, and then we universalize it. We take it to the world. We give it to everybody else. But we have to be really careful early on in our journey when we're unhealed, when we have a lot of unresourceful stuff and unhealed stuff going on inside of us, because then we really attract the most awful projections. Like people used to come up to me drunk at parties and go, oh, my God, I thought you were such a bitch, but it turns out you're lovely. And I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm the nicest person on the planet. Like, it used to destroy me. But again, it's this line five projection.
Yeah.
So, yeah, people, I mean, the collective consciousness, the female collective consciousness has been conditioned to, you know, really criticize, judge, and even brutalize their own bodies. So being a line five, that would have very much been projected onto you.
Wow, thank you for schooling me. I love this. I knew I'd have so much fun on this podcast. I'd be like asking a million questions. But, yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well. And then, like you said, like being really young and not being able to process and know what's mine and what might have been somebody else's projection was like a big learning. And to be completely honest with you, I don't think I ever got a hold of that until I started seeing a therapist and could start to process what was my own stuff that I needed to work on and heal and, you know, digest and grow from and learn and I guess lean into as well, some of that discomfort. But then it takes a lot of power to then be like, actually, that's got nothing to do with me. But for me, that's come through both therapy and hypnotherapy.
Yeah, I've never done therapy per se. I mean, I've done every modality. I've done a couple of sessions of therapy, but I've done lots of hypnotherapy now. I just freaking love it. But it's so fascinating because when we look at our design, we can really see like, wow, yeah, far out. That is the thing that so often the thing that is our greatest challenge is also our greatest superpower. So So tell us a little bit about you, Kate. You're morning TV, you're healing yourself. Like the Lola Berry that I know really well is that entrepreneur. Like I think did you, like I remember seeing you kind of in this same sort of echelon with like Marie Forleo, because I remember following her when I was building a business. Like obviously Lisa Messenger, which was so weird when I was sitting at lunch with you and Lorna Jane and Lisa Messenger, and there was some other incredible women as well. And I was just like, this is freaking me out because these are the women that I followed for so many years and so inspired. So where do you go next?
It's so funny. It's I love hearing, it's nice to hear you say that, but like I have always been a person that has just stayed in their lane. So I've never been able to, and I was talking to a friend about this last night, I'm not great at stepping outside myself and kind of looking in. I'll always be like, this is where I am right now. I'm going to honor this moment. I'm going to stay present to this project, which is why I think to the outside, it probably seems like I'm entrepreneurial because I don't feel like I am, but I know that when I'm doing a project, I'm going to honor that and give it every part of my heart, soul, spirit. I don't want to leave anything. What's that saying? Don't leave anything like you don't want anything left. Yeah. You want to give it your all. And I do that with any business venture, whether it's writing a book, whether it's setting up a smoothie bar, whether it's working in television, whether it's learning to be a voice actor, or whether it's like, you know, whatever that is. Like for me, I've been doing scene study at the moment. I've had to do a really intimate scene, so I've been to work really hard on that. And it's just like wherever I am, I'm like, well, I'm going to be here fully. I'm going to give it my all. And then I think as a result of that, that's how I've written all the books and that's how I've had the businesses. Some failed, some succeeded. But I think I've just like honored that calling, gone for it, given it a red hot crack. But then also sometimes you've got to know when to let go too, right?
Yeah. And, you know, this is the thing, like being a manifesting generator, so, you know, buckle up, Lola, because I think I'm about to blow your mind again. one of the cool things about our energy, because I'm also an MG, is that we do have these huge growth periods, you know, like we just skyrocket and then all of a sudden we hit this plateau. And often in the plateau, MGs will quit all the things, even though they're not meant to quit. They're just like, it's a time of integration. It's when things are kind of starting to make sense, you know, become, you know, from my perspective, long-term habits, all the behavioral stuff is really integrating. And, you know, like you have tried so many things. Has there been a time in the past where you're like, damn it, why did I quit that? Why did I let that thing go? Because in hindsight, it was just, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that.
It's funny. So my whole motto is just don't have regret. Like, don't have regret. And so, like, that's how I've kind of made a lot of my more adult decisions in my 30s, I would say, is, like, I want to give this thing a shake so that I don't regret it 10, 20, 30 years down the line. That's why I did IVF and froze embryos with my partner. Things like that where I was like, oh, you know, I don't want that regret down the line. Like I just, that's why I give things a shake, but I've never looked back. Like the smoothie bar is a great example. I was so excited to set it up. I knew that working in like a consumer business, like essentially grab and go takeaway. I knew that that wasn't my passion straight out of the gate. And I verbalized that with my business partner. I said, I don't know if this is for me. And I said, but I'm here to learn. And we went with it. And it was just having a smoothie bar in Melbourne. It meant that it bled money in winter. It's too cold for smoothies. No, and even though we'd launched toasties and soups, it just wouldn't. It flew in the summer and it would die in the winter. And I think we got to our third winter and my business partner said, I'm out. And I think he expected me to buy him out. And I sat down with my hypno and my therapist and I said, I need to get my ego out of the way to make this decision. And I was so close to buying everyone out. And I said, I don't want bricks and mortar for me at this stage of my life. I don't want a business. I didn't live in Melbourne at the time, which would have tied me back to Melbourne. And I just said, I've got to get my ego out of the way and sell this business. And it was hard. It took me a couple of weeks and I was really emotional because, like I was saying, the heart gets in there.
Yeah.
And you really want it to do well, like on so many levels. And it did do well in many ways, but it also didn't do well financially. And it was such a gift. Like I learned P&L. I learned what it was like to hire and fire. Like I learned what it was, how to discipline. And I learned how to, like, it was really hard for me because I wanted to be friends with all the people that worked with us. And my business partner was like, you're doing this wrong and it's going to backfire on you. And it completely did. And so it was me that then when things would go wrong, I'd have to go in and be like, guys, this is what's going wrong. If these new rules aren't adhered to, we're going to have to fire and hire. Like, and I hated doing it, but what a brilliant lesson to sit in that fire and discomfort and to go, okay, this actually, I'm doing it, but it's probably not my passion. And so I've never really had regret about letting go of anything because I've always felt like it's made space for the new thing or the passion. And I've never regretted anything I've gone for that's failed. And I've never regretted anything that I've done and then moved on from, like writing nutrition books. Like I remember the beautiful goodbye email that we wrote to my publishers at the time after doing 10 or 11 books together in regard to the nutrition and wellness space. And it was so beautiful. And it was like the most beautiful parting. And I just think I've never regretted. I don't know why.
I love that. It's funny because I'm the same. Like I'm like, I don't do regret. You know, that's my thing. I don't do regret. But I also love, like, you know, again, you're really speaking your design in so many ways because you're also a line one. So it's like you've got into the details, you get into the minutiae of things, you find out, but it's like everything that you also just talked about was your emotional authority. It's like how you're actually designed to make decisions. So although you have very fast energy, you know, big, impactful, multi-passionate, you also have to make decisions over time. So when you said, look, it took you 2 weeks just to go through the process, like that's how you're designed to make decisions. You're not designed to make decisions in a 24-hour, like, you know, click the fingers, we're done. It's this process over time. So I love it. And that line one is such the authority, you know, it's the investigator. It's the one that gets all the information, that crosses the T's and dots the I's. And again, like I can just hear you speaking all of your design, which is really beautiful. And I think the other thing with being an MG is like you get in, you get what you want and you get out. Like part of your whole purpose, I often talk about the container of our purpose. It starts with type. And an MG, like a large part of the container of your purpose is to demonstrate human potential. So hearing all of these different things that you've tried and succeeded and some haven't succeeded and like going through this whole process is really demonstrating to, you know, those people watching along that, you know what, success doesn't look like, you know, the story, or doesn't have to look like the story that you were taught at school. You don't have to get good marks, go to university, pick one thing and go forever, because us MGs don't do that. Like we're going to do a bunch of different things. Is there anything there that you want to respond to?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Like at 32 or 31 was when I started acting training. Like what? Like, you know, I'm 38 now and I'm like, I'm so rapt that I did that. It's come with loads of failure because that is the world of acting. You're auditioning and it's a world of rejection and you're just like, whoa, this is a resilience game more than a talent game some days. But I wouldn't have it any other way, like because when people say to me, why did you get into acting? I remember I called an acting school and I just auditioned for co-hosting a TV show for Channel 7 in Australia. And I was really nervous about the auto cue. And so I'd learnt it by rote, which means I just read it over and over and over and over and over, and I'd written it over and over and over. Not a spot of acting training, really. I'd done acting at uni, but that was it. And I got there on the day and I freaking loved it. Like time stopped. I just was like, oh my God, this is my passion. I need to host a TV show. This is unreal. But the feedback I'd always get is, oh, you know, there's a lot of other girls that want to do that as well, that are ahead of you in the line. You know, we've already got the Sonia Krugers, we've already got the Rachel Finches, we've already got, like, and it'll always come back and they'd be like, you're best at being the segment girl, the wellness segment girl. And I was like, yeah, but I want more. And so I called up an acting school and I said, oh, I see you have a TV presenting course. I may as well skill up in auto cue so that fear is negated. And they said, it's full. And they said, have you thought about acting? And I said, I'd rather swim with sharks. And they said, well, that's a great place to start from.
Yeah.
And I enrolled the next day. Oh, I enrolled in, yeah, and I haven't stopped training since. And there was a moment, I have a really distinct moment. I was working with my favorite acting coach and we were doing a really hard Tennessee Williams scene and I had to have a Southern Belle accent and it was a really loaded scene. And there was a moment where he was directing, all my peers were sitting in the theater, my scene partner was on stage with me. And something happened where I could feel electricity running through my veins. And I just looked, and I'm getting goosebumps saying this story now. And I just looked at him. Yeah, it's why I do it, I tell you. And I remember I held my hand after the scene. I held my hand on my heart. And my coach did the exact same thing. He mirrored me. And I said, I don't know what just happened, but that's why I'm doing this. It's bigger than me. Yeah. And so that's what I always remember when acting school gets hard, because it gets hard. And it takes a while to find the right fit and the right school. And I've done lots of improv and voice training too, which is like, essentially, you're falling on your face every day. Improv school is really hard. And I just always come back to this moment where I was like, no, that was bigger than you and you need to honour that feeling in your heart. And, I don't know. I just want to share that story because that's a big barometer for me.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing. So a large part of, again, human design, we get people out of their head and into their heart because basically what – or at least into their body. One of the primary pillars of human design is that we don't make the best decisions with our head. We have this incredible supercomputer between our ears, but it's not meant to be leading. And we live in a world where it leads. And we're moving to a new time, this whole new paradigm, where we have to get back in the body because the body's the one that leads, the heart, the soul. And you know, like what you're talking about, that's you being completely lit up. And I love what you said, you know, I'd rather swim with sharks. Like one of the places that a manifesting generator thrives is outside their comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, like that's where they come to life. So I love it. And I just have to geek out, human design geek out with you just for a moment. One of the channels that you have, and I get that this is not going to mean anything to you, is the 1222. And this is going to be where, you know, that feeling came from. And it's this energy, it's kind of called, the channel itself is called the design of a social being. But this is all about the voice. It's all about when you're connected to your emotions, to your heart, you're in the mood. And that's a big player. Like if you're not in the mood, you can have just as much unresourceful impact as you can have resourceful impact. But this energy, it's like channels, it's a channel, the 12 holes of the channel, meaning that literally source is moving straight through, like coming straight into your throat. And this energy can move any room. When it is fully aligned, it is absolutely that feeling that you were talking about. Like it has the power to move every room. And I think it's a thing that, you know, when I sat down, when I met you, when we're talking, it's that piece that you just said, I want to be friends with everybody, that worked for me. That's the 1222. It's this beautiful, like makes people feel really at home and you feel really connected to them. Again, you're just speaking your design. It's such a large part of the way your energy moves. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I love it. It's so funny having done so much voice work as well. And like you can hear in your voice and feel it when it's coming from this very real part of you. And even yesterday, I teach yoga here in LA, and I was teaching a class themed around satya, which is truth and truthfulness, to live a truthful life. And I taught the class and I was saying goodbye, and people were walking up. Americans are very forward about what they think. They're like, oh my god, this is the best yin class I've ever done. And I'm like, ugh. I was just like, I'd planned the sequence, I'd planned the music, but like when I share these little like moments, it's like my voice changes too. It's like it comes from a very deep part of my soul or something. And I'm not saying I'm some like conduit or anything like that. But
you are. We're like, this is the podcast. Yes, this is how all of our energy works. You know,
yeah,
so let's not
cool.
diminish our superpowers there, Lola.
Well, it's thank you, by the way. It is nice when you do feel that. And it's funny when I feel from that space, my voice feels strong. Like it feels in my body. I'm like, oh, I feel really strong when I'm in this space. And I feel whatever the opposite of anxiety is what I feel. Like I feel grounded and clear versus when I feel like out of alignment or in an uncomfortable situation, not the discomfort that you were talking about where we like thrive, you know, how like, I love feeling out of my comfort zone and being forced to adapt. But, like, when I feel discomfort and, like, potentially a bit unsafe, I'll notice, like, my voice will change and I'll feel, like, an unease in my heart. Whereas, like, when I'm, like, connected, clear, open, my voice is stronger. Fascinating, isn't it?
Mm. Well, again, like in human design, being a manifesting generator, it means you've got a channel. And for you specifically, you've got a channel from a motor to the throat. I know that doesn't mean anything to you, but it will to a lot of my listeners. You know, like one of your most powerful attributes is your voice. And the key to it is getting the hell out of the way, you know, getting the mind out of the way and letting it just, you know, letting yourself speak from that place that you were talking about. So let's talk about the acting. I just love that you are like, okay, well, not only did you start in your 30s, but now you've like, you have like bitten off the whole thing. You're like, oh, well, I've committed to this thing. I'm going all out. Like I'm moving to LA. Like, what's that even like? Like, how do you even do that? I thought we couldn't just move to the States.
Well, it takes a lot of work. You know, it's brutal. LA is, I call it the brutal, beautiful beast. That is LA. Because you'll have days where you're like, what is going on? I feel like I'm standing in the eye of a storm right now. And then all of a sudden something will just like click into place and you're like, oh my God, that thing that happened a year and a half ago has just paid off today now in this way. It's like, it's also a city of open communication and relationships. So it's all about like, it's interesting you say talk about voice and being like always speaking and communicating. It's a very LA thing. I don't know how else to articulate that, but I mean, like, to get here and to be living here, for those listening that are like, oh my God, like, yes, it does involve visas and lawyers and a lot of money to get those visas and lawyers, and so it's, for me, this is my third or fourth year of spending half the year over here, although this year we're basing ourselves here, but it's Matt's first year on a visa, so like he's finally come with me. So for the last 3 years I've done long distance for half the year while my beautiful boyfriend's been in stunning Byron Bay. This year feels exciting and a bit different for me because it feels so real because we're grounding here, you know.
Yeah. So what is it like doing long distance? Like, seriously, like, how do you manage a long distance relationship? Because again, like, I just love following you on Insta. I love how much you're always posting about the joy of him and his adventures just as much as yours. So how do you do the long distance thing?
When we met, we were each other's first Bumble date, like 6 years ago nearly. And when we met, we were already both, I think Matt was 3 years into his therapy journey and I was about a year and a half, 2 years. And so we were already working on ourselves consistently. Yes, through like Matt's really into breath work and meditation, but like also classical therapy, as was I. And I was more like hypno and therapy. And I think as a result of always like having this non-biased person and entity that we were able to check in with, it meant that we weren't putting our own baggage onto one another. Yeah. And so it's meant for a very healthy relationship. And obviously it's not the norm to have a long distance relationship for 3 years or half of 3 years every year. I think having that mental health plan has been really important for both of us because we both, when we feel unsafe and ungrounded, we both fall into different forms of anxiety. And so having that core and being able to come back to that has allowed us to like move through any discomfort without blaming the other person for that discomfort.
Yeah, I love that. And so again, from a human design perspective, we talk a lot about this new paradigm that we're moving towards and what it's going to do. It's moving us from this, the energy of the planet is moving us from this like man, woman, husband, wife thing into this very, it's about intimacy. So it used to be about procreation and now it's about intimacy. Mm. And so we're moving to this whole new model. And, I mean, we're seeing in our external reality, like all the lines are being blurred when it comes to, you know, sex, relationships and intimacy. So whenever I hear stories like this, I'm like, yeah, it's just more evidence that we are feeling safer to rewrite the rules and do it the way that feels correct for us. And, you know, I think it's interesting, again, you were just speaking your design, like you've used the word safety a number of times, and that line one is what we call a foundational line. It's all about, you know, when you've got the answers to create a safe foundation, then that's where you thrive from. But when you're missing, when there's a gap of information, that's when that anxiety comes in for you. Mm. Does that resonate?
Big time. Oh, mate.
Yeah.
Big time. Yeah, big time. I was in a situation a week ago where I didn't feel safe and it rattled me, and straight away emergency therapy session, and then had to get the courage to speak up. And it was like all my self-doubt, all my mechanisms that like, would, and a lot of anxiety that would usually stop me from stepping forward, had to take a back seat because I was like, I have to rectify this situation to feel safe. Safety is huge for me. Like,
yeah,
it is safety. And then I also don't like the feeling of feeling suffocated. Like, I have to feel free to be me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating again. Like, it's that line five thing that's big as well. Like, they want to have a massive impact. And manifesting generators as well. Because we have what's called a motor to the throat, like manifestors as well, we're energetically independent. So that can often mean that they are, you know, we feel more free spirited. We're that whole like being, you know, being sort of shut down, controlled, any of those things can feel really uncomfortable for your energy because it's meant to sort of be big and impactful. So yeah, that makes so much sense. So how's that? So you're in LA, you're super excited because you're there with your favorite human. How is the acting going? Like, yep, you're in year three. So does that mean you've got relationships? Have you had small parts? Like, tell me a bit about where you're at in the actual journey.
Yeah. So I did my first audition with my first agent when I got here, like literally 3 years ago. And I remember thinking it was such an ego check. I was like, oh my God, I've got my agent. Tick. Woo. Going to be the next Margot Robbie. And then the audition came through and the first audition read like Kristen Bell type. And I was like, great. I've got the comedy bones for sure. No probs. And then I kept reading the audition and I was like, oh my God. This is an ad for vagina deodorant. And I was like, okay. And I had to barrel the camera and be like, this is my audition. I had to say, I'm your fanny godmother. And I had to make a makeshift wand and say, this deodorant is safe to use on your whole body. From your pits, point to my armpits, to your privates, point to my vagina, and then to your feet and point to my feet. And I remember I did it in an American accent and then I was like, this is too funny not to do with an Australian accent. Like, oh, I'm your fanny godmother. And I hit send and submitted it and I didn't get even a call back. And I remember thinking, fuck, this is going to be a long road. Like, this isn't an overnight, like they talk about overnight successes and all that. And I was like, nah, you got to strap in. And I had an actor friend who's had a lot of success here go, buckle in. He goes, just buckle it. And he says it to me every time I get here and I always get emotional because I feel so seen. And so that was my first kind of like taste. Then COVID shut a lot because I was here for a lot of the COVID stuff. And so that shut everything down. And then I bustled around with different agents and it was like a bit of a shit fight, if I'm honest. And then last year I focused really heavily on voice acting and I was like, imagine being an eight-year-old little turtle or something, you know, like in an animation. Oh, sign me up. And I just loved voice acting school because it's a bit gentler than some of the acting schools. It's like trial by fire. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I could tell you so many stories. And so
have to share at least one story. All names. You can leave the names out, but I'm so curious.
Yeah, I'll share. Voice school was so nurturing and, like, you'd get out of the booth and they'd be like, all right, go Lula, cheering you. And I was like, oh, this is fun. And so I decided to write to like the big voice agents in Australia, and I really wanted a voice agent. And they also often have other arms where they look after your social media stuff and sometimes like commercials. And commercials is great for actors because you make great money and you get to act. It's not like the Golden Globes or the Oscars, but it's a really great stepping stone to being a full-time working actor. Yeah. And so I was like, great, this would be awesome. So I wrote all these agencies and donuts, no response, no nothing. And then I got connected to a friend and he was like, do you want me to just talk to my agent? And he was a voice actor. And I was like, oh, what's your agent? And I knew it. As soon as he said it, I was like, I've emailed them 5 months ago, no response. He goes, yeah, just let me have a chat. I go through this whole audition process with this agency, like top of the pops agency, full auditioning. And by the audition process itself was 3 months long, Emma. Like it was a beast. So by the time I got to this final audition with five people in the room, they were like, so like we were chit-chatting. It was really good vibes. And then eventually they're like, so what are you here for? And I was like, I made it. Like, I'm like, they're either going to like me or not, right? And so I was like, oh, guys, this is a really Australian thing to say. But I just said, I'm not here to fuck spiders. And they just like burst into laughter. And then like an hour later called me and they're like, Lola, we're not here to fuck spiders. We want to sign you. And it was like a beautiful little lesson in like, just be yourself, you know, and just own who you are and don't let anything color that, like just be you. And so that was a really nice win in the agency world. And then I've just been essentially just training my butt off. And then it's really funny because, like, my work when I come back to Australia, I get lots more kind of, like, speaking and doing live events and get to interview so many more actors and stuff like that because of all this training I've done. So it's all kind of, like, moving in the right direction, but I definitely haven't booked an acting job as other than stuff that I'm still Lola, if that makes sense. They'll hire me and be like, we know you have all this acting training. Can you actually do this for this campaign? And so it's totally paying off in that way. But as far as me, like, getting to act in, like, a period piece from 1883, no, that has not happened yet.
Yeah. It will, far out. It so will. And I really want to get to the podcast in a minute, but please, you got to give us one of the stories, one of the things that's like, you won't believe this stuff happens.
Okay, okay. I was in class and I did a scene from Succession. Do you know the TV show Succession?
Yeah.
So I played a character called Jerry, who's fantastic. And in this scene, I am verbally berating a younger character in the show while he masturbates, right? That is the scene. That is the scene.
Yeah. So it's already intense and you said nothing.
Already intense. Anyway, so I run the scene. My beautiful, lovely, funny teacher was like, okay, end set, we ended the scene, and the scene ends with the other actor climaxing. That is how the scene ends.
Yeah, right.
And the teacher's like, and I chose to play for power. I was like, she's not getting turned on by this. She wants power. She wants to move up in the business. Anyway, and that is how it was played in the show in the end anyway. But aside from that, the teacher's like, Lola, it's not sexual enough. I need you to feel this one in your clit. And I was like, what? I'm sitting there. In pajamas because it's a nighttime scene, and I hear the whole class start snickering, and I'm like, "Oh my god!" Anyway, it was just one of those moments where you're just like, "What? What is my life right now? What is my life right now?"
You know, it's that whole like, you know, that blurring of the lines. Like you are out there being so vulnerable, trying to do this role to the, you know, do this thing. And someone has the freedom or the authority is a better word to, you know, like give you that feedback. Like, fuck, that's intense. And I suppose those things really, you know, they create real resilience, like real resilience.
Yeah, my boyfriend says that's my superpower. He's like, your superpower is resilience and adaptability. Although as the older I get, I'm so like not willing to bend with some of my, I'm like, no, this is something that I need now. But resilience, I think, is one thing. Like it's like even all the auditions I've done since I've got here, just so the listener knows, like when you do an audition, you don't hear if it's a yes or no. You only know if you get a callback. So you'll put your blood, sweat and tears into an audition, hit submit, send it to your agents, and you'll never hear a word again. You won't get feedback on it. You won't be like, we loved her, but we need someone blonde. Or, you know, none of that. You literally hear nothing, zero.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. Yeah.
I tell you what, that would have been a few hours. Like, there'd be a few hours in the with your therapist with the whole acting thing, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We've spent – few, mate. Are you kidding? We spent whole sessions on it, and I'm like, what do I do? Yeah.
But it's great to have that support, huh? All right, let's talk about this podcast of yours. I love the title. Like, instantly when I heard you share the title with me at the lunch, I was like, oh, I bet she's a line three. But you're not. You're a 5-1. And it's called Fearlessly Failing. So one of my traits is the ability to fail. Like, I'm really good at it. I'm really resilient. I'm the, like, ultimate experiential learner. So, you know, then I started listening to the potty. Like, I just freaking love it. So where do you get the inspiration? Like, what did you respond to that was like, that's it, I'm going to start a podcast and it's going to be about fearlessly failing?
So it was born years ago. The pod is like, I don't know how many eps we are now, but we're heaps. Like, it is 3 eps a week. It's mental. Like, I love it. I love it. It's like my baby. So it's been going for yonks. But the reason why it existed is like, my boyfriend inspired it actually, because he is a composer. And so he was like, you've got this great skill set, you know, in me. Like, why don't I help you create it? And I was like, well, what do I want to do? Interview people about what? And I was like, not just success, but like the growth along the way and the lessons along the way. And that's where, like, why it was called Fearlessly Failing, because I think when we fail, we get to grow, we get to skill up, we get to learn about ourselves, and failing really isn't failing. Like, really, it's just like lessons, essentially.
Yeah, well,
and
I always say it's like you're winning or learning. Like, that's really,
yeah,
there's no such thing as failure.
Yeah, big time, big time. And it's interesting, I've interviewed a few people that are like, please don't use the word failure. Like, you need to use the word lesson or learn. And I've obviously adapted that for those guests, but I kind of like fail. Like, I'm definitely someone a bit like the way you said, like, I'll run towards a failure. Like, it doesn't bother me too much, like, to fail. Obviously, like, yeah, sweaty palms and all that kind of thing. It's not like, I'm not like, woo, this feels great to be making a dick of myself at acting school. But it's still, I'd rather do it and come out the other side and be like, I did that scary thing. And so that's why I love celebrating failure. And I over the years, the pod has transformed because I am so passionate about acting. I'll always now, like, I'm like, if I can get a writer or a director or an actor, I'm just like, well, I'm going to learn off this person. So it's become a journey in and of itself, the pod.
Oh my God, I love it. So I have to ask the obvious question. I think I actually asked you at lunch, but I'm going to ask you again. Who are your favorite guests so far? You can give me a couple.
There's a beautiful actor I interviewed called Owen Teal. He's off Game of Thrones. He's the character, spoiler alert, that kills Jon Snow for the watch. You know, is his like stabbing line. And he was in Australia doing a play, and they invited me to the opening of the play. And I said, I'm only going to fly down for the opening if you let me interview Owen Teal. I'm a massive Game of Thrones fan. And they're like, no, all his media commitments are done. And I was like, oh, well, I shot my, you know, gave it a crack. Thought nothing of it. And I said, no worries, let me know if anything changes. 2 days later, they're like, Owen has said yes. And oh, it'll make me so emotional telling the story. But anyway, I did the interview. I didn't say I was an actor. I just did the interview. I researched very heavily. That's that. I think that you said I've got that in my human design, like cross the T.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing, yeah.
Like 8 to 12 hours, I guess. I'm like, wow. Pretty OCD about it. And so I was ready for that pod, and he was incredible. We had to go to a special location to record it, and straight away he was like, can someone make sure all the ventilation's turned off? It's going to affect her sound. Like, he was just protecting me from the second we sat down, did the interview, and then right at the end he was like, you've got a spark. And he said it after with,
again.
Yeah, it makes me cry. He goes, you've got a spark, don't ever let it go. And I said, well, I'm an actor. And I said, it's so brutal. And I said, I did an audition for Barbie, the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
And I said, I had to do the whole audition in my bikinis and just do like a a 360, like turning my bikinis. That was the beginning in the audition. I said, it's fucking hard, mate. It's so brutal. And he goes, it is brutal. And he said, but the readiness is all. And he says, stay ready. You will get your opportunity. And that stuck with me. And he just grabbed me, hugged me. And then he gave me this double hug. And I was just like holding. I was like, do not cry when you first meet. I want you to do not cry. Like he was just like, I just felt so, it's like when somebody has a sparkle in them and they see that sparkle in you. It was that, like, and I was like, and I asked some people when they come on the pod if they could have a superpower, what would it be? And he said, you know when people get sad hearts? And I go, yeah. And he goes, I wish I could heal those hearts.
Oh, wow.
I was like, everyone else has invisibility or be able to fly. You want to heal sad hearts. Like,
yeah.
He blew me away. Anthony LaPaglia blew me away as well, another Australian actor. Yeah. He told a great story about rejection that I always remember. Yeah. And that was about an agent not wanting to sign him after he'd done Empire Records, which is an amazing movie.
It's one of my all-time favorite movies, Empire Records. I freaking love it. My kids now love it. Like my 16-year-old is like, best movie ever, Mum. So,
well,
yeah.
he you'll love this story. And he had done that. I think he'd just turned 40 and his agent had passed away. And so a friend, and he was kind of being handballed around the agency a bit. And a friend said, do you want me to call this really big agency? And he goes, yeah, all right, let's find out. I'm ready for a change. Like I think I need a change. And 2 days later, the friend called back and said, would you like the feedback? And he said, of course, he's a straight shooter. There's no flies on Anthony. And he said, the friend said, the feedback is that ship has already sailed. And this is before, and he said, within 3 months I signed with a new agent and signed Without a Trace, which is a, I think it was an NBC network drama. He was the lead for 8 years.
Massive stuff post 40, like massive. That person that made that decision is, you know, Julia Roberts with the bags. Big mistake.
So he confronted him, Emma.
I love it.
So he ran into him at the Emmys or the Golden Globes, something backstage, and he walked up to that agent and he goes, you were right. That ship had sailed, just not into your port.
That is so good.
And I said, where do you get those balls? Like, I don't have that curry. I don't have that. I was like, I want that. But he takes no prisoner. He's fantastic. Like, go get a great voice as well. Like, I always listen to people's voices before I interview them. And I was like, oh, this is a great half Australian, half American Bronx. Yeah. Like, great.
He's Brooklyn-y. So good.
Yeah. Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, that's so epic. Oh, my God, that's so good. So what have you learned from the podcast? Obviously, you've told me a couple of really cool stories, but what are your greatest lessons that you've taken from the podcast?
When someone says no, say okay and get on with it. Say okay, and just get on with it. Like, I think it comes back to that projection piece that you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
It's often got nothing to do with you if somebody says, no, well, you're not right for this role, or I don't want you for this, or this isn't right. Okay, cool. Yeah. On to the next. Like, and that ability to let go and keep moving forward, that's a really handy lesson that you can implement, like, straight away.
Yeah.
You know, if you're connected, you can be like, okay, that's not who I am, and so that's okay. So I think that's been a really big one. And then another person that I loved interviewing was Trent Dalton, who is an Australian author. He wrote Boy Swallows Universe and Lola in the Mirror.
My eldest son was an extra in that because his bestie was his dad directed it.
Wow, what a beautiful show to be part of.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So Trent Dalton cried. We were both crying in the interview and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't expect to cry in this interview there. And he's a heart-led person.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking when I walked away from him that if I make choices from the heart, it won't let me down.
Oh, I love that. That is so powerful. And, you know, like, one of the biggest things, just to sort of almost back that up from a human design perspective, is, you know, being a manifesting generator, your gut is everything. You know, like trusting your gut over everything else is really, really important. So, yeah, I love that. Well, I gotta let you go. I could talk to you forever. I'm super conscious of your time. Thank you so much for being here with me, Lola. It's been so much fun.
Thank you for having me. I feel so lucky we met that day. Like, literally, I was coming to LA like a week later. So it was so lucky that we were able to connect and make this happen. And please, please stay in touch. I cannot wait to watch your journey as well. It's been an honor.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm actually going to be over there. I've got a few podcast interviews that I have to do in person over there, and we're doing a bunch of stuff. So I'm absolutely going to look you up when I'm over there in June. I think it's June-ish that we're there.
Let's do an LA hike. Let's do an LA hike or a green smoothie or,
yeah,
100%. I would absolutely love that. I think, and I think you're going to have the best time ever. And I'll give you all the tips. I'll tell you where to go.
Sounds great. Amazing. Sounds so, so good. So, Lola, can you just share with my beautiful listeners, where can they find you? The podcast, we obviously talked about it, but the podcast, website, Insta.
Yeah, the pod is just wherever you listen to podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, whatever floats your boat. And my Insta is Yummo Lola Berry from when I was a nutrition influencer. I haven't changed it. I've just kept it the same. And yeah, I just share my little wins and behind the scenes. And that's me. That's me, gang.
Oh, my God. I love it. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening along. I trust you got what you needed from today's episode. Once more, thank you so much, the amazing Lola Berry. And thanks, everyone, for being here. So I am going to let you go, and I look forward to having you on the next episode. Bye for now. Thanks, everyone, for being here all the way to the end of the podcast. I hope you got lots of value out of it. I certainly had a lot of fun doing it. Could I please ask that you share this podcast with friends if you found it valuable? And also, bonus points, could you leave a review for me as well on Apple? It would be greatly appreciated. If at any point you would like to be on the podcast, or you've got questions that you'd like me to discuss on the podcast, by all means, get on my socials and DM me. Everything you need is there in the show notes. Have an awesome day. Bye for now.